All right. So last time round, we approached the discussion in the Mishnah on Gimel Amud Aleph, the first Mishnah on Gimel Amud Aleph, and the Gemara's explanation of it, but we didn't actually get to see how the Gemara's answers fit into the language, like how Rashi's explanation of the Gemara's answers actually fit into the language of the Mishnah. So again, the situation we're talking about is that witnesses claim that so-and-so divorced his wife and owes her the ksuba. But in fact, he's still married to her. So the question is, what is kasher zamam? What was it that they were trying to cost him? It isn't that they were trying to cost him the ksuba. That's not correct. Because the reality was that the higher percentage is that he's going to pay out the ksuba anyway. So the question is, what exactly was the cost? So we gave, through this discussion in Rashi, the Gemara gives three different explanations of what it is, and we showed it through Rashi and at the very end rushed through it in the Gemara itself, but we'll take it a little slower. You can see on the sheet, the Mishnah's wording was very strange. The Mishnah's wording was, Omdin kama adam rotza litein b'ksuvasa shel zu, Shem nisalmalna o nisgarsha. We evaluate how much one would give for the ksuba of hers, such that if she would be widowed or divorced, or the ksuba of his, for that matter, such that if she would be widowed or divorced, period. And then it throws in what seems to be a separate statement, v'emesa, and if she dies, yirashana bala, then the husband will inherit from her. So it's just, the whole thing is very strange. So in order to understand this, we had to explain what his ksuba is and what her ksuba is, because that's what the terminology is that the Amoraim are going to use to explain this in the Gemara. And we said his means the value of his ksuba claim. So realistically, it will be more likely that he is going to be the one who's going to have to pay out the ksuba. So her claim to the ksuba, so to speak, is worth more than his claim to the ksuba. If you had to put a dollar amount on the value, you know, that he owns of the ksuba, the anticipation that he's going to keep that money, it's going to be lower than hers. On the other hand, he has better terms in the sense that land that is identified as, you know, being held for the ksuba is his during the course of the marriage. And number two, in the event that she dies, he just keeps it. He doesn't have to go to court to get it. Whereas for her to get the ksuba, she's going to have to take him to court in order to get it. And she has no access to the land that's being held for payment of the ksuba. On the other hand, odds are, as we said, she's getting it. So Rav Chista in the Gemara said, he basically seems to ignore the language of the Mishnah. Rav Chista says, Biba'al. We are just saying that the Edom Zomim have to pay his, meaning the value of the odds that he is getting to keep the ksuba. I don't see how that fits into the language in the Mishnah. It doesn't seem to. As opposed to the second approach, which is Rav Nassim Bar Oshia, who says it's Be'isha, it's hers. So the way to read the language in the Mishnah, and I put it there on the sheet for you, is Omdin, we evaluate, Kama Adam Rotza Litein Biksuba Sashel Zu, we evaluate how much his ksuba is worth. We're saying zu in the Mishnah, even though ze is really what usually used for male. Nonetheless, how much one would pay for his ksuba rights, minus She'im Nisalmana O Nisgarsha, what's the subtraction here? We're subtracting from his, right, it's not the value of her ksuba, that's why I was getting confused. It's what I said originally. It's how much his ksuba rights are worth by taking the value of the ksuba and subtracting hers from the ksuba. So if the ksuba is worth $1,000, her share of it is worth, let's say, $600, $400 remains, that's what this is going to be. That's the idea. It's the value of the ksuba minus the value of her share. That's the way Rashi understands of Nassim Bar Oshia.
Is that the same thing as saying the subtraction figures. The same thing as saying how much one would be willing to pay her to buy her ksuba, right?
How much one would pay for her right to the ksuba, that's correct. So, looking at the language in the Mishnah.
This is how they're calculating that.
Correct. Correct.
Right.
You're evaluating kama adam rotz alitim b'ksubasa shel zu she'im nis almana o nis garsha. How much one would pay for this ksuba that if she were to be the one claiming it, right? If she becomes widowed or she becomes divorced. And then what's left is v'emesa yirashana bala, in the event that she dies, then the husband is going to be the one to inherit it. So it's that amount of imesa yirashana bala, which is going to end up being what they pay. That's the way that Rav Nosson Bar Ushia is reading it, as explained in Rashi. And then Rav Papa says, I agree with what's being said. However, only the ksuba. Rav Papa says, be'isha ubiksubasa. What that means is, it's the ksuba minus the value of the her share, but also it's only the ksuba, strictly the ksuba, and not the nichse malog. Nichse malog is property that she brought into the marriage that the husband is entitled to use during the course of the marriage. And what we're saying is, that's not really part of this. It's just the strict ksuba amount. And the reason why Rav Papa has to say that is because, you know, if you've ever learned ksubos, you know that that gets called ksuba also. The property that's associated with it, that's associated with the marriage, gets associated with it as well. So effectively, you're reading the Mishnah as saying, evaluate how much... I'm reading my own notes and I'm going to get confused if I do it. They evaluate how much his portion of the ksuba is worth after you subtract hers, but only of this ksuba and not the nechse malog. That's
so
the point
of
hers.
Hers is what she brought into the marriage.
Hers, which hers?
Hers is what you'd be willing to pay her for her rights to the ksuba.
Normally,
some
yes.
Person would be willing to pay this woman.
Correct.
The chance that they'll collect, or maybe in the end, and I'm not collecting if she dies first.
But we're subtracting that from the value of the ksuba, and that's what they cost him. In other words, let's look at it logically. Okay? What did you really cost him? At the end of the day, what was this cost? So Repub of Chizda is saying the answer is the value of the odds of him keeping the ksuba. Right? That makes sense. What was the worth of, to borrow what Ira was saying, what would somebody have paid for his likelihood of getting the ksuba that they can take over for him? Which makes sense, because that's what they were costing him. Rav Nosson Bar Ushia says, no, it's the ksuba minus the likelihood that she's going to get to keep the ksuba. Because that, you can argue, is his claim to the ksuba. The ksuba's worth $1,000. But on the other hand, he may never see it, right? Subtract from that whatever the value is that we can really associate with her share. And then what's left is his. So that's another way to look at it. And Rapapa is just a variation on that. That's it. It's a nice long Rashi. Rashi then goes into other ways to read it. But I had a feeling that was enough. If you want, we can go into that. Like, there's more you can do with it. But Rashi doesn't like his other way of doing it. Okay.
To read our chista into the Mishnah, you almost have to say omdin kama adam rotelitim. It's almost adam is the baal, like how much the baal would be willing to pay to not have. You can't halachically do that, obviously, but in other words, how much the baal would be willing to pay to absolve himself of being required to pay that ksuba im the salman.
But it's the value of the odds of him keeping the ksuba.
The odds of him.
In Rav Papa, it's not what he would pay. It's sort of what he would not pay.
No, it's what he would pay right now to not have to give the ksuba.
The odds of her dying.
What he would pay to absolve himself of the
The number that he would pay would be.
The odds of him. In other words, you're calculating.
So it's more than just a straight formula.
That's what
he's
saying.
He's saying
she's sick. You know, affect all that.
No, you
can't do that because obviously he has the choice of what to do. That's there. You can't do that. But in other words, how much would he be willing to pay now to absolve himself of future responsibility in this?
Right, but that's not what we're saying. We're saying it's how much. how much would somebody pay to buy whatever rights he has to the ksuba? That's
his
different.
Rights.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. So that's different. Okay.
So that's difficult for me to understand because.
What Eitan said? That's okay.
No,
it wasn't right.
That wasn't right. Yeah. No, he's saying.
What's only willing to pay the Baal for his rights to ksuba were he to outlive the wife? It's just confusing to me because he doesn't have to do anything right now.
Right.
He only has to go into his pocket and pay
if he divorces
when the time
her.
Comes. So what rights is this guy buying off the Baal?
Because in their world, and this is something that the Gemara talks about in different cases, this was the word right isn't really the right word for it, but this was something that you could convert to currency. Like, this happened. People would say, I want to buy your rights to the ksuba. You want some quick cash instead of a payday loan? How about you sell us your claim to the ksuba? We buy ksubos.
But the money is in his pocket. It's not in escrow somewhere. It was they buy the ksuba, his claim to the ksuba off him. It just means he doesn't have to pay out.
Yeah. It is in.
The money
is
set aside somewhere.
It actually is.
Oh,
you identified a piece of land.
Aside?
You identified a piece of land from which the ksuba could be claimed.
Oh.
There's a whole discussion in ksubos about then what happens
right.
And something happens to the land and so yeah. But there actually was.
Aha. Okay, that makes a difference.
Okay.
So now
he can use the land. I mean,
yeah.
Right. It's his land until it has to get paid out later.
This land is his land. Okay. So. The Mishnah now, are going to, they're done with that. And moving on to another case of what you could sort of call futures, but it's not really. A 10-year loan is the issue. And what we're talking about here initially is not a Shemitah discussion, although that's where this is going to end up. But the question is, you have somebody who borrowed money for a period of time, let's say 10 years, because that's what we're going to say, and they testify that he actually owes that money in 30 days. So, again, it's not we would have cost you the value of the debt because he was paying it back eventually anyway. It's we cost you the difference between paying it in 10 years and paying it in 30 days. So that's where the Mishnah is going with this. Our Mishnah is very clearly assuming that a 10-year loan is an option within halacha. Meaning, even though Shemitah nullifies debts, and they're not talking prosbul at all in this discussion, nonetheless, if you extend a loan to somebody, and the loan can't be claimed until after Shemitah, it's not nullified by Shemitah. Which is what we hold, the halacha. That is the halacha. Meaning, when everybody says,
wouldn't
come Shemitah.
Wouldn't the concept of a 10-year loan?
Yes.
It, so.
That's exactly right.
I think this is the proof that
yes.
This is the halacha.
Yes. The people always say, Shemitah comes, you better get a prosbul because it's
that.
Only true if the loan was already due. If the loan was not already due, you don't need a prosbul. That's fine. So take a look at the Mishnah. Me'iden anu bi'ish ploni shu chayev l'chavero elef zuz, amenas litnon lo mikan ve'ad shloshim yom. We testify that so-and-so owes the other guy 1,000 zuz within 30 days. V'hu omer mikan ve'ad asher shonim. But he says, no, it was, in fact, 10 years. And then they become zomelin. Omdim kama adam rotza litin v'yeyu biyado elef zuz beinosna mikan v'ad shloshim yom beinosna mikan v'ad esr shanim. So the answer is they owe whatever one would have paid for the right to have a longer period to the loan. Right? And that's actually fairly easy to calculate. Like,
right.
This happens in loans all the time. But it's a little harder in our industry because we don't have interest. So it is, yeah.
Right.
That would be the difference. But yeah, somebody who said, well, I want a 30-day loan is going to get, in the open market, a better, a more favorable interest rate than someone who says, I want a 10-year loan. You want more time, you have to pay for the time. That's the definition of ribis in halacha is agar natar lei. Payment for waiting to get the money back. That's really what it comes down to. So that should not be controversial. What gets controversial is the Shemitah aspect of it, and Rav Yehuda is going to quote Shmuel, And we're going to see two different versions of the discussion with practical differences. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. This is version number one. Rav Yehuda says, quoting Shmuel, Hamal ves chaveru la'eser shanim. You lend somebody money for 10 years. Shvi'is misham taso. Ha! Shmita knocks out the loan. Ve'av agav dehashta lo karinan ve'lo yigos. The Torah's pasuk when it says that you're not supposed to claim a loan after Shmita, or during Shmita perhaps, that's a machlokas. But when we say not to claim the loan, the Torah says lo yigos, do not oppress. So even though right now, during the Shmita year, you're not oppressing anybody because the loan's not claimable yet, so, if asili de lo yigos, you would ultimately end up violating lo yigos, and therefore, our statement is the loan is knocked out by Shemitah. The opening statement of Yehuda quoting Shmuel is against what it seems like our Mishnah said. There is no such thing as a 10-year loan. Masiv Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana says, what are you talking about? How can that be? Read our Mishnah. Omdim kama adam rotza litin viyu elav zuz biado bein litin mikan vat shloshim yom bein litin mikan vat eser shanim. It's explicit, right? We evaluate how much it would cost him to extend a loan from 30 days to 10 years. V'yam richvias misham taso. If you're telling me Shemitah knocks out the debt, kulhunami boi shalom elei. In that case, this is really easy, right? Just pay everything. Because it means that he would never have had to pay it up.
Right.
I don't know what the lender was thinking, but that's the way it's going to work. So the Gemara says, I don't understand what you're talking about. So Amar Rava, Rava says, no, I'll tell you why. There are loans that do not get eliminated by Shemitah. That's the answer. Hacha b'may eskinan, what's our case here? We're about seven lines down. B'malve al hamashkon, it's where someone lends with a collateral. Here's another example of a loan that Shemitah does not eliminate. Uvamoser shtaros of lebezdin, or if somebody hands over the document, the shtar, to the bezdin to collect. Disnan, because the Mishnah says, hamalve al hamashkon, if you lend money with collateral, or vahamoser shtaros of lebezdin, you hand the document over to bezdin. We're going to explain what that is in a minute. Ein mashmitin, Shmita does not knock it out. So the conclusion of version one of Rav Yehuda quoting Shmuel is that there is no such thing as a 10-year loan. Then how could our Mishnah present a 10-year loan? It's a different type of a loan. It's a loan that Shemitah will not eliminate.
So it's got to be collateral that it's not going to get knocked out by Shemitah.
Correct. Collateral, or you hand it over to Beis Din. What do you mean? Personal loans can have collateral.
You can, but they might not. So I'm saying...
No, but he's saying this is a case in which...
I loan money with no collateral just because I trust the rabbi.
Oh, then you're out of luck.
Right.
Moral of the story. That's what it's... look, it's not me. I'm just reading the news. Right. So, in terms of what Moser Shtarosav actually is, what does that mean? You give over your shtar to the Beis Din. So take a look at Rashi. Rashi sides with Ira. It is... Where did it go? First in line. Yeah, thank you. Moser Shtarosav to the Beis Din. Who prosbol shehiskin Hillel? Rashi believes this is Hillel's prosbol. Shekasuba, in which it's written, Mosrani lechem ploni uploni hadayanim shemakom ploni. I give to you, the judges in such and such a place, shekol chov sheyeshli sheegvenu kozman sheertze. Any debt that somebody owes to me, I'm going to collect it whenever I want. So it's prosbol. That's the way that Rashi understands what this is. Tosfos disagrees. Tosfos Moser Shtarosav LeBeisdin says, Pirush HaKuntras Dahainu Prozbol. Rashi says it's a Prozbol. Velo Nira, that does not appear correct. Daba Mesecha Shvias Tani, because in Mesecha Shvias we have a Mishnah which says, HaMoser Shtarosav LeBeisdin. It gives the case of somebody who gives his shtar to Beisdin, his document to Beisdin to collect. That's actually the source that we quoted in the Gemara. And then, Vahadar Katani, and then it says, separate statement, Prozbol Eino Meshamet, that Prozbol doesn't get knocked out. So why did you say prosbol separate from hamoser shtarosav? Alma trei milininu. It must be that these are two different things. Lekach nira de trei milininu. Sotos says, yeah, they are two things. Moser shtarosav lebezdin mida oraisa eno mishamet. He says prosbol is a derabanan concreation. Moser shtarosav is a biblical idea that loans that are extended via a bezdin with the authority of a bezdin are not eliminated. That's the way Tosis reads it. But what is this debate really about? So there are two different views about what Moser Shtarosav LeBeisdin is, how it works. What exactly does it mean, I gave it to Beisdin? And I gave it to you on the sheet. If you take a look at source Aleph, Rashi in the Gemara in Gittin says, like he said here, that it's prosbol, but he says, the tafsi lehu beidina, beisdin takes the payment, they're the one who collect the money, the hefkeron hefker, we have a rule, hefker beisdin hefker, beisdin of a certain level of authority has the ability to say, you think you own that, but you don't, poof, now it doesn't belong to you anymore. And in fact, a beis din of sufficient stature can actually not only say you don't own it, but can give it to somebody else. So the so beis din here is saying, yeah, we vanished your ownership rights from that. That's not yours anymore. That's the
eminent domain. Is that what
you're saying? I mean, in a sense, except that they're not a government; they're just a court.
Right.
Courts don't have eminent domain power. They so therefore. The it's what's going on here is actually Beisdin, Hefker Beisdin is empowered to do this Moser Shtaros of LeBeisdin, and in a Prusbol, the rabbis are saying that's what we are letting you do. Even though the power to do this to people's property should not exist for a Beisdin now, Midrabbanan Beisdin have this ability. That's what Hillel created with the Prusbol. That's Rashi's understanding.
You're saying they take it from the one guy and give it to the other.
That's what ends up happening, yeah.
It's not like a free-for-all, it's just basic transfer to the guy.
Yeah, it isn't as though now we can just watch what happens and then grab it ourselves, right?
You're saying that the Gemara said, that a prusbul would not be necessary were we to have
a beis din
or beis din d'oraisa.
Not a beis din d'oraisa, just a beis din. I mean, it has to fit certain qualifications for Moser Shtaros the beis din, and then, yeah, you just hand it to them.
Kind of would not be necessary.
Well, according to Rashi, what Rashi is really doing is he's saying Hillel did not create anything. Rashi is saying all Hillel did was he popularized an existing method.
Right.
He didn't create anything new. That actually really matters for a Gemara in Gittin. But let's go through Rashi and Tosfos.
He's saying so, right? It says Gavim Avelok Rinim Bei Lo Yigos. He's saying Lo Yigos doesn't apply, and even Midoraisa, it's all. In other words,
well, it's fundamentally a Derabbanan innovation.
Right, but even. Midoraisa, it's not.
You're not in violation of the Doraisa law because you didn't do anything. Tosos's method is different. Tosos in Gittin Lamed Vavamed Aleph says that Moser Shtarosov is a biblical thing separate from what Hillel did, and it's Xeris HaKasov. It's because of a pasuk. If you take a look at the Sifri, which he quotes in source base, the Torah says in Shemitah year, Asher Yelocha Sachicha Tashmet Yodecha, whatever you have with your brother. Release it. So he says, "V'lo shalachicha biyadecha." That first part of the Sifri is not relevant for us. The next part is what matters. Mikana to Omer Hamav alamashko emeshamit. That's the first half. The part I bolded. Es achicha tashmet yadecha. Whatever is with your brother, you shall be meshamit. V'lo hamoser shtaros of the beis din. But not if you give it over to the beis din, because the beis din is not your brother. Beis din is nobody's brother. So therefore, it's only that I, private citizen, can't claim from somebody else. I have to release it. Beis din has no such obligation. So Moser Shtaros of the Beis din is a biblical concept that Beis din is able to collect debts. You turn it over to the Beis din, that means the Beis din is doing the collection. That's what's happening. That's the way the Sifri works. That's what Tosfos says. And Tosfos says, prosbul is a different story. The reason why this matters is because of the question of how could Hillel come along and undo biblical law that says the loan is void. So one approach is Rashi's approach. He says, Hillel didn't do anything. Hillel just popularized an existing thing. It wasn't Hillel's creation at all. But Tosfos now needs to get into it. What exactly is it that Hillel is doing? If what he's doing is a derabbanan, that leads to all sorts of very interesting questions. But that is absolutely what Tosfos believes. There's this whole idea in the Rishonim that actually either Shemitah was only Derabbanan in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash because you didn't have all the tribes in their proper places, and therefore Shemitah was only rabbinic when Hillel created this, and therefore he could undo it. Or, this is bizarre, but Hillel created Prusbul to be operative when the second Beis HaMikdash would be destroyed. It wasn't meant to be then. It was meant for when there would be no Beis HaMikdash and Shemitah would become Derabbanan. For all the people who are worried about all the Ayin Haras in the world, right? The Hillel was not worried about saying, listen, when the Beis Hamikdash is destroyed, this will work. The it's like, wow. In any case, there's more to say about that. Writing on the wall, perhaps, to quote Daniel. The point for our purposes is, yes, Rav Yehuda quotes Shmuel to say, there is no such thing as a 10-year debt. That's the upshot of all of this. Now we get the second version, back in the Gemara, about 10 lines down. Ika de Amri, alternatively, Amr of Yehuda mar Shmuel, Hamal ves chaver la eser shanim, ein shvias misham taso. There's a Tosis in Beitza. I didn't think of it, or I would have actually looked it up to show it to you. But there's a Tosis in Beitza that says you will never find an Ika de Amri, version one and then version two, where they diametrically contradict each other. But that is exactly what you're going to see right here. He says in the second version of it, it says specifically Ein Mashmitin. Nope, Shmita does not knock out the 10-year loan. At all. Why not? Because you didn't claim it yet. That's the idea. Granted that you will eventually end up oppressing the guy to get paid back. During Shemitah, it's not so. Amar of Kahana. So now, your question from the Mishnah is no longer a question. Now it's a support. He says, yeah, our Mishnah supports that idea. We learn that too. Omdin kama adam rotza litin v'yu elav zuz biyado bein litin mikanvad lamed yom bein litin mikanvad eser shanim. Our Mishnah said, you just evaluate the difference. What would you pay to extend your loan from 30 days to 10 years? V'yamrit shvias misham taso, if you believe that Shemitah knocks out a 10-year loan, kolunami boy shalumile, then you should pay for everything, because converting a loan from 30 days to 10 years means you're never going to have to pay. Amar Rava, to which Rava comes back, and he says, no. This Mishnah is talking about a different case. One of these cases where the loan doesn't die. So the second version of it is the opposite of the first. So the question becomes, so what's our psak? What do you do? You have two versions of this in the Gemara. Version one says that the loan is not canceled. Is canceled. Version two says the loan is not canceled until Rava comes along.
You know, saying Shalom Eile is like the entire sum is not really fair, because it really depends on what, like, where you are in reverse to Shemitah with getting that loan. If you have to pay the entire sum, but literally the day of Shemitah, where the loan would be forgiven. But if you're 7-6 years away, there's you wouldn't have to pay the entire sum.
Why not?
Because it's still a 6-year loan.
But the amount hasn't changed. I don't understand, right? The amount, it's a loan of $1,000.
I mean, you're not getting interest during that time.
Yeah, there's no interest.
You have more time to pay it back, so it's worth
something.
That amount of money. Oh, right. No, if, right. You're saying that in the event that Shemitah does cancel the loan.
I'm saying it's unfair for the Gemara to say that they would have to pay the entire sum.
Are you working within a system where the Shemitah does or does not cancel
Shemitah
it?
Shemitah does cancel.
So Shemitah does cancel it, then I would just be happy that my loan is being extended from being 30 days to being never pay this back. Right?
Right. But it's saying...
Why does it matter whether that happens in 3 years or in seven? See, the argument you could make is because we learned that even though you're not obligated to pay it back, you're supposed to try to pay it back. You're supposed to say, Afal Pichain, I understand, Shemitah knocked it out. Nonetheless, I want to pay. And, you get to pay it back as a good guy instead of paying it back as a debtor. And in addition to that, then you can say to him, listen, I really want to pay you back. But, I don't have means right now, so let's come up with some terms or something like that. Because if you don't come up with terms, I'm just not going to pay you at all because Shemitah's on my side. Yeah.
According to the first version, which says that Shemitah does knock out the loan.
Yeah.
Unless it's with a mashkan or the shtar is handled to Beis Din.
Yeah.
Why would anybody in their right mind make a loan more than six?
Yeah. Well, that's the Torah's concern.
It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't, it has to involve everyone's gonna lend with a mashkin or give it to Beis Din.
So
because these loans aren't gonna happen at all.
Right.
It makes no
sense. So that's the Torah's concern. Karvash nas hasheva shnas hashmita, and therefore I don't want to lend anybody. Forget a 10-year loan. I want to extend a 2-year loan.
Well,
I'm not gonna do anything.
The 2-year loan's different because the 2-year loan, you know, shmita. Shmita's in 3 years.
I'm going to cut you off because of time.
Okay.
But what I'm saying to you is, the Torah says we are worried as Shemitah draws nearer that you're going to reduce the time frame available. People are going to say, well, I don't want to lend anything that's going to be after Shemitah because it's going to get canceled. It will go from what you're saying, which is there will be no 10-year loans ever, and we could extend that, say there will be no 8-year loans or whatever ever, and now there will be no 3-year loans, then no 2-year loans,
right.
then no 1-year loans. But the answer to that is that in the Torah, loans are tzedakah. That's the way the Torah frames loans. Loans are not a business arrangement. You're not making any money. It's, you know, extending money on an interest-free basis, you know, means you're behind the eight ball no matter what. At the least, you've lost opportunity cost and inflation. And that's assuming you get paid back at all. You know, but that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying to you is the Torah system envisions loans as shemitah. That's why as tzedakah. That's why the Torah's framing of tzedakah is ha'avei ta'avitenu. It doesn't say give. It says lend. Loaning in the Torah, lending money in the Torah is fundamentally a loan, often agricultural. You had a farmer who says, I don't have the capital to get seed, to get equipment, to hire workers. So lend me money, and then end of the season, I get my crops, I sell them off, and now I'll pay you back. That was like what a loan was for. But let's just to discuss very briefly what you do when you have these two versions, you know, of this. Where do you end up? So I brought a few on the sheet, but I think I'm going to say it outside for time reasons. The Ritva brings those who say we should follow version one. Version one means loans are never. I'm sorry, loans don't survive Shemitah. Even if they were not due yet, no 10-year loan is void. That's version one for two reasons. First of all, because Rava makes that argument. Right? That was Rava's argument in the first one and in the second one. Rava ended up on that side both times, and we like Rava. That's number one. Number two, we have a basic principle. When you have any doubt regarding a financial matter, the rule is, the oki mamona bechezkas mare, leave money in the hands of whoever's holding it right now. That's a basic principle. You don't take money away from somebody unless you can prove you have a right to. So here, what that means is, the money is going to stay with the person who's holding it, which happens to be the borrower. So he's, you know, when the music stops, he's the one holding the money. He's the one who's going to keep the money. The Ritva brings that view. But the Ritva quotes Rabbeinu Tam to say no. We don't. We follow the second view. And the reason is because we have a Gemara in Shabbos Kuf Mem Hei Amud Beis, which talks about something called being a Shushvin. Shushvinin are best friends. You're set up here for a Sheva Brachos. This is relevant. In the days of the Gemara, you had something called a Shushvin system, in which the best friends would arrange that, this was like a contract almost, when somebody in that group would get married, the rest of the group would give them gifts, make sure everybody would hold big, it was a thing. And everybody in that group would be responsible to every other one in that group when they got married. It was called Shushvin. So the Gemara in Shabbos Kuf Mem Hamad Beis says Shushvinus is not nullified during Shemitah. It's not canceled during Shemitah. So, you know, why not? The guy's not married yet. It's like a 10-year loan. It's not coming due yet. Nonetheless, that shows me that Shemitah doesn't do it. And the Ritva quotes Tosos and the Ramban and ends up saying that we actually follow the view of Rabbeinu Tam, which is to follow number two. That's the upshot of it, is that we follow version number two, and therefore these loans are not canceled. But wait a minute, what about what Rava said? Rava seemed to side with that view. Yeah, but it was just a dichuya, he says. It was just Rava was just trying to show you, yeah, but don't bring me proofs from, because I could knock it out. Rava was being clever. But it isn't actually what he holds. Number one. And number two, because Shemitah today is derabanan. And since Shemitah today is derabanan, we will not say the principle of oki mamona b'chezkas mare, keep the money where it is. Because the whole claim of I don't need to pay you back is itself rabbinic. And therefore, we're going to say no. We're going to side with the lender. That's the idea. Clear?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's go further in the Gemara. He also has this last line question of, I don't understand why the Rif omitted this entire discussion from the Gemara. It's practical, according to the Rif, believes that Shemitah is relevant. But that's its own discussion, Shemitah, Derabbanan, and Deoraisa. Let's go further. So we are on Gimel Amud Beis, where the lines get wide, you go up about a dozen lines. V'amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Rav Yehuda says, now quoting Shmuel. Before, was he quoting Shmuel also? Yeah, he was. Okay. I ask because Rav Yehuda is a Talmud of both Rav and Shmuel. So Rav Yehuda quotes Shmuel to say the following. Ha'omer l'chavero, amanas shalo tishmiteni shviyas. This is now a tangent. We're no longer in Makos. We're no longer discussing Edom Zomim. And if you didn't like Edom Zomim, good. He says, what happens if you extend a loan to somebody and you say, I'm lending it to you on condition that Shemitah isn't going to knock out my claim to this money? Bad news, dude. Shviyas mishametes. Shemitah's knocking out the loan anyway. It doesn't matter what you say. Lema kasavar Shmuel. Is that because Shmuel believes, masna amashakasuv batorahu, this person is making a condition, he's making a stipulation counter to what the Torah said? Is that the reason? And the rule is you can't make conditions like that, right? I can't extend a loan to you and say, on condition that I'm allowed to charge you interest, right? That doesn't work. But didn't we learn? If somebody says to somebody else, I am lending you money on condition, I'm buying from you or selling to you, on condition that there is no claim of, that you cannot claim against me, ona'a. Ona'a literally means abuse. Alef Vav Nun is a reference to one's power, one's strength, like Reuven Kochi Vereshis Oni. Ona'a has sometimes where it's ona'as devarim, that is verbal abuse, and sometimes it's ona'as mamo, and it's financial abuse. Specifically, where you're selling someone something and you ridiculously overcharge them, or you're buying something from somebody and you ridiculously underpay them. So what happens if you say to somebody, listen, I'm selling this to you on condition that you can't claim ona'a? What happens? Rav Omer, yesh lo alav ona'a. Rav says, too bad. He can claim ona'a. Ushmuel Omer ain lo alav ona'a. And Shmuel says, no, now you can't claim ona'a. So now I don't understand. You told me that Shmuel believes you can't make conditions that are counter to the Torah.
You're talking about the 1-6?
Yeah, that's correct. So I don't understand why, when it came to Shemitah, Shmuel said you can't make a condition like that. When it comes to ona'a, Shmuel says you can make a condition like that. So the Gemara says, because you have to read a little further. Ha'itmar Allah, now we learned regarding that. Amar Rav Anan said, L'didi mifreshali minei de Shmuel. I understood from Shmuel the following. Amanash she'en l'cha olai ona, ein lo olav ona. Amanash she'en bo ona, hare yesh bo ona. There is a nuance in the way you word it. If you say, on condition that you can't claim ona, that works. I'm not saying that the Torah has been thwarted, but you can't exercise your right. That's effective. As opposed to, if I say on condition that there is no ona'a, good luck, pal. That's not effective. Rashi and Tosos have a machlokas as to what that last case was. Either Rashi says it means you said, on condition that I haven't overcharged you or underpaid you, which is false. Tosfos says no, it's more parallel to the Shemitah case. It's on condition that the law of ona'a won't invalidate this transaction. Again, doesn't work. And he says now the same thing is true in the Shemitah case. Hachanami, here too, al menashalo tishmiteni bashevi'is, if he says to him, on condition that you will not release my claim to you in Shemitah, on condition that you will not exercise your rights, ein shvi'is misham taso, then shvi'is doesn't knock out the loan. Amenashe lo tishmiteni shvius misham taso. But if you say on condition that Shemitah will not knock it out, that's not subject to your say. It doesn't matter. Clear? Good? Okay. Tana, we're on the third medium line. Hamalve, this is a brand new thought. Hamalve es chavero stam. If you lend money to somebody and you don't specify when it's due, so number one, that's your fault. But fine. You lent somebody money. You didn't specify when you can collect it. Eino rashai letov o pachos mishloshim yom. So the only reason we're bringing this is because it's a tangent from the Shemitah discussion and from Shmuel. We say minimum 30 days. You can't claim the loan in less than 30 days. Sava Rabba Bar Bar Chana kamei de Rav lemeimar hani mili b'milva b'shtar. Rabba Bar Bar Chana is sitting in front of Rav, and he says, I assume that's specifically talking about a loan where it's written up in the document. Remember that the rule is that the borrower is the one who has to hire the sofer. So the borrower would not have gone to the trouble of hiring a sofer to write a document unless he expected to have the money for 30 days. He is not going to go to the length of writing the shtar for less than 30 days. But if it's a verbal debt, then it can be even less than 30 days. You can claim it already before the 30 days. That's what I thought to say. Amar le Rav. Rav says to him, Hachi Amar Chavivi. So said my beloved. Rav's beloved is Rabbi Chia. If you remember the Gemara at the beginning of Psachim, Rabbi Chia was his double uncle. He was his uncle on his father's side and on his mother's side. It had to do with half siblings. But the deal is, how do you say uncle in Hebrew? Dod, which means Anila Dodi, beloved. So he's his double uncle. So he calls him Chavivi. He's really beloved, Habibi. So he says Hachi Amar Chavivi. This is what Rabbi Chia said. Echad hamilva b'shtar ve'echad hamilva alpe. Whether it is a written loan, whether it is a verbal loan, does not make a difference. That's the idea. And then we quote a brisa to support it, and we'll stop with that, I guess. A couple minutes. Tanya Nami Haki, brisa says, Hamalves chavero stam, eino rashi letov o pachos mishloshim yom. When you lend somebody money, you don't specify the date, you're not allowed to claim it within 30 days. Echad amilva b'shtar v'echad amilva alpe, whether it is written or whether it is verbal, does not make a difference.
Where does it come up with why 30 days?
That's the next line in the Gemara. That was beautiful. Thank you. That's exactly what the Gemara wants to know. Amar le Shmuel or Rav Masna. Shmuel says to Rav Masna, Lo teisev akaroch. Don't sit down on your legs. I'm going to explain that probably next time because there's a lot to say about that line. But don't sit down on your legs. Ademifrish shesla lahash maisa until you explain that lesson. Minah milsa da amar rabbanan. Where do the rabbis get this idea? Hamavas chaver stam in a rash letovo pachos mishloshim yom echad amilva b'shtar echad amilva alpe. How did they know it's 30 days for a verbal or written loan? Where did they get that from? Amar lei, he says, and this is the part that comes out of our Gemara. Dichsiv karvash shnas hasheva shnas hashmita. Because what we're worried about, what I quoted to Ira before, is that the creditor is going to say, I don't want to extend loans, Shemitah's coming. Year of Shemitah is coming, the year of Shemitah. So that has redundancy. Since it says the year 7 is coming, don't I know that that's the year of Shemitah? What did you mean? The year 7 is coming, the Shemitah year is coming, why did you need to say both? Ela matam lomar shnas hashmita. Why did it say shnas hashmita? Lomar lach to teach me. Yesh shmita acheres shei kazu. There is another shmita, so to speak, that is like this. And what is that? The ezo zo hamalves chaveru stam. That's somebody who lends without specifying a date. Shena rasha letovo pachos mishloshim yom. That there's a 30-day period when you can't claim it. Amar mar shloshim yom b'shana chashiv shana. Because 30 days in a year is considered a year. And what he means by that is the following. What he's trying to say is this. The same way that shmita cancels your ability to claim the debt. If there's no date specified with the debt, there's also a Shemitah period. Not an indefinite Shemitah, but a Shemitah period of 30 days when you're not able to claim the debt. There's a moratorium on claiming it. And that is like a year because we have a principle which comes up in contract law in Judaism that 30 days is the equivalent of a year for various purposes. So therefore, when it said Shnas HaShemitah, it means this. And what the Torah is saying is, we don't want you to refuse to extend loans because of the fact that you're going to have this 30-day moratorium. First of all, you can get around it. Just specify a date, pal. But that's the point, and that's the message here. What I want to come back to next time is this framing that he gives of, don't sit down on your legs. What was that about? Because there's a nice Torah that's connected to that. Okay?
Yeah.